Welcome to the best damn hunting podcast on the planet. Welcome to HuntCast. And now your host, TJ Schaefer.
What's up, guys? TJ Schaefer here. Thank you for tuning into the HuntCast. This is episode number 38, and we got a little special treat for you today. My brother's not with me. He's out and about, but what's even cooler is I got my oldest daughter, 13-year-old Abigail Abby Schaefer. What's up, Abby?
Hi.
How are you?
I am amazing.
How's your summer going?
Boring.
Yes.
Why? Because school's out and I can't see my friends every day like I usually do.
Yeah, but you're still Snapchatting, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that what you do? Isn't that what you call it, the Snapchat?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm a nerd, aren't I?
No.
Hey, so when are you going to come out to the deer lease and work with me?
Whenever.
Are you ready for some hard work?
Yes.
And some sweat?
Yes, I guess.
Why do we do all that work?
So we can hunt.
And we can shoot stuff, right?
Yes.
Yep. You got to teach them, guys. You got to teach these little girls what to do. Hey, so you know how to skin a buck, don't you? Do you think any of your boy classmates do as well?
Some of them, but not all of them.
So you can probably skin a buck quicker than some of these other boys, right?
I guess.
Yeah? You should like shooting pigs?
Yeah, because they tear up crap.
Yep, that's right. They tear up crap. You heard it right here. Anyway, guys, hey, look, thanks for tuning in. Before we get started, I want you guys to please go. And go to our Instagram account. It's at the HuntCast. And be sure to follow us there. We're also on Facebook. Just search the HuntCast and you can like it or whatever you do on that. And then be sure to check out our YouTube channel. We're just getting it started. It's just rolling along. But you go to YouTube and search the HuntCast. Get subscribed there. You can follow our adventures or whatever. So there you go. There's the promo, Abby. That's what you have to do. You have to lay it all out for the listeners so that they know how to follow you and keep up. So anyway, today's super cool. We got a great guest, a guy that I've been wanting to talk to for a long time. It's getting to be July, and with that happening, we will be dusting off those bow cases for a lot of us southern hunters, because we put them up when rifle season comes around, it seems. But we'll be dusting off those cases, getting the bows back out and getting them tuned up and start flinging some arrows. Getting ready for bow season in a couple of months. And I've wanted to cover this subject for a long time and really dive in depth into archery and more specifically arrows. And it just so happens that this guy that we got on the show today is basically an encyclopedia of arrow dynamics and weights and all that good stuff. And we're going to really break down today what you guys need to have and in order to get great penetration, pass-throughs, whatever you want to call it, to successfully harvest these deer, pigs, or whatever you're shooting at. So without further ado, we're going to get this episode started. Are you ready, Abby?
I am.
Are you sure?
Yes.
You got plenty of time?
Yeah, I guess it's the summer.
Yep, you got plenty of time. All right, so here we go. Let's get it started. All right, we got Brian Broderick on the phone. He is, I guess you're the owner of Day 6, correct?
It depends on who you are.
There you go.
Collector or no.
Yeah, but yeah. Well,
all other things, yes.
Day 6 gear. You guys predominantly, I'm uneducated, I guess, with your company as far as what all y'all offer, but I know y'all offer arrows and broadheads. And you and I had a conversation, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 days ago. And I said, you know, it seems to me like you guys are a boutique arrow company, kind of. And you agreed with me, which I kind of was surprised, because most people don't want to be known as, you know, I guess a boutique, because that just means more expensive and more whatever. But what I was meaning, and I think you'll agree with me here, is that you guys pay attention to pretty much everything when you're producing arrows.
I think I understood, you know, the inference there when you said boutique. It's just, you know, it's a very small operation, consumer direct, and focusing on, you know, a special niche in archery, bow hunting. So I think you're spot on there. doesn't bother me a bit.
Well, the reason why I wanted to have you on the show is because I've heard you on a couple other podcasts, and you definitely have an understanding, and you can teach me and all of our listeners kind of the ins and out of why we need to pay attention to what we're buying arrow-wise and what we need to, you know, what we need to know about it. Because I am, as all of our listeners know, I'm from East Texas, okay? And I'm about as redneck as you can get as far as hunting goes. I'm just a good old backwoods boy. I go down to my local archery shop. I bought a bow a while back, shot it a ton. I got more arrows than I know what to do with. And when I go to buy arrows, I usually just tell a guy, hey, here's my draw weight. Here's my length. And, what do you recommend? And then they start telling me, well, here, this is what you need. So they cut me up a bunch of arrows. They fletch them, or they come pre-fletched, whatever. And they hand them over to me, and I go shooting. And and I feel like that's probably what the majority of at least Southern hunters do as well. I mean, you're from Alabama, and so do you have that same experience as far as when people go to buy arrows, that's kind of what happens?
Yes, sir. That is, I'd say that it's pretty accurate assessment. I mean, it's not that it's not that it's a bad thing. It's just that it's our culture. I don't want this to come across as a archery shop or pro shop bashing session, because there are certainly wonderful shops run by wonderful people out there that provide an incredible service to guys that are just getting started, even guys that are, you know, experienced. Where we differentiate a little bit, I would say, is we cater to not only the guys that really know their stuff. They've got a lot of experience afield, a lot of experience, archery hunting, different species, and they know what they want in their setup. But we also, help a lot of new guys that are maybe acquainted or associated with some of these guys that are kind of more advanced in their, understanding of what it takes to get good penetration, good arrow flight, which of course those things go hand in hand. So, I went into a local archery shop. Oh gosh, I guess about a month ago, I was setting up a bow for a friend of mine, and I was just going in there to get a whisker biscuit to set him up for his rest. And while I was in there, I'm in the arrow business. I went over and looked at their arrows, and they probably had, 800 to 1,000 arrows in there. And I started looking, and they literally had all 400 spine arrows. And so I asked the guy, I said, well, where do you keep your 350s and your 300s? And he goes, oh, no, we you can make a 400 work for any setup. And I went, oh, okay. So,
well, and I want to, I don't want to bash anybody either, but let me just tell you my experience. Okay. So, we have searched and searched, and I've probably been to half a dozen different archery shops within a hour and a half distance from my house over the last 2 or 3 years. And what I have found is, usually there's one person in the shop that knows what they're talking about, and then they got two or three buddies or kids or whatever that help them. And they're just doing basically what the guy who knew what he was talking about told him to do.
Right.
And what to recommend. And a lot of times that's based off of what they've experienced. And if their experience is limited, then they're going to pass that limited knowledge onto the people that are helping, which in turn pass it on to you. And I want to say, we're going to have another show with you soon, because you've killed a lot of crap, man. I mean, you've shot a lot of stuff all over the world. So you got the experience to make it happen. And what I want to do is, I kind of want to dive into the arrows a little bit and what all these numbers mean. Okay. And let's just dumb it down. Let's talk to all the redneck listeners or whatever, and let's just kind of go in steps of explaining what these numbers on the arrow mean and why we need what we need. Okay, so if you don't mind, I got three different arrows in front of me.
Okay,
and they're all a little different, and they're all from different setups that I've used. One arrow is one that I shot for probably 5 or 6 years. The next arrow is I got a dozen from a guy, and they're different. And then the last arrow is the one that I'm currently using. And so we'll just start with the first one, if you don't mind. I mean, it's a 340.
Yep.
And then it says 10.4 GPI, grains per inch.
Uh-huh.
So tell me, what does the 340 mean? It's the spine, but if you can, kind of break it down.
Sure.
And tell me what that means.
Sure. Let me preface this conversation where, number one, you're very kind to say what you said and consider me some type of authority. All I'm going to tell you is what I know. I hope that it's right. And you know, if it's not, I apologize. But, you know, I'm going to give you the information to the best of my knowledge as I understand it, okay? So I was that guy, the young guy working in the archery shop in high school. and when the guru was off bear hunting or elk hunting, I was the guy trying to remember what in the hell he said when customers asked certain questions and just parroting what he said. But fortunately, I had the opportunity to work in this shop for many years. I got a good formal education with regards to setting up bows, tuning, things of that nature, and it just provided for an incredible foundation, you know, for the future. And it's just like, you know, if you don't pay attention in class, you know, the first 3 years of school when you're learning your basic math, and then you decide you're gonna, you know, buckle down and study when you get to algebra, well, it's not gonna work because you don't have a foundation. You don't even know where to start, and archery is the same way with it. Just like anything else, you've got to have a good foundation. So I just didn't want to come across as some kind of know-it-all. I've been in the guy that didn't know shoes for a long time myself. So so with regards to the number 340, that is the spine, and that is the amount of deflection when you apply a certain weight to the center section of that arrow spanning 28 inches. That makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if the arrow was sitting on 2 points, 28 inches apart, you hang a weight on it, and you know what? And I should know what the weight of that thing is. I got one right here. It's about 2 pounds, something like that.
Okay.
Hell, it may be more than that. But anyway... but it's the amount of deflection in thousandths of an inch. So when you hang that weight in the center, that arrow will bend or flex 340 thousandths. Does it make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So, so anyway, and the lower the number, the stiffer the arrow because it's flexing less. A 250 is only flexing 250 thousandths. Does that make sense? So,
yeah.
So anyway, so that is the what that number represents. So the higher the number, the weaker the spine. And of course, the weaker the spine, the lower the poundage, the less force it's going to take. So you're basically, you know, trying to correlate a spined arrow that is going to match up properly and flex the proper amount. To be the most efficient with certain weights, draw lengths, et cetera.
Okay. So going back to what you were saying at this archery shop that had nothing but 400 spine arrows, I mean, it's just that was pretty much wrong. I mean, not knocking the guys, but it
– No, it's wrong.
Okay.
No, I mean, there's no other, you know, you're never going to get people may not like what you say, but you're never going to get in trouble for telling the truth. And that's just the truth. That's just wrong. So, you know, if that was the case, there would be no reason for the aero companies to make, you know, 10 sizes.
Yeah. So we may be jumping ahead here, but how do you determine what spine is correct for your bow?
Well, that's a great question. And fortunately, rednecks like us don't have to do the math and the calculations and all that. A lot smarter people than us have done it for years before us, and they continue to make adjustments as the bows continue to develop and their performance, you know, levels increase, their power strokes get a little more efficient, things of that nature. So there's plenty of charts and, you know, calculations out there that kind of give you a range for it to work. So, but each arrow is different. And each arrow has a certain type of a certain weight component, you know, outsert, insert, whatever goes on the front to adapt the, you know, the point to the arrow. So that weight, you know, affects the spine of the arrow as well. So, you know, if it's, if you've got 100 grains up front before you even put a head on it, you know, you're going to have a, you know, a pretty flexible spine there because it's pushing that weight up front and it's causing the arrow to flex.
Gotcha.
If you only have a 15 grain outsert up front, it's going to be extremely stiff because it's not really pushing any weight up front.
Right.
And so I would all of that has to be taken into consideration.
And I would assume if you have a shorter draw length and your arrows are cut shorter, that's going to make that arrow stiffer than someone who has a longer, I mean, like 28 to 30. If you got a 28 inch arrow, it's going to be stiffer than a 25 inch arrow.
Yes, sir. That's correct. And so let me just kind of give you maybe a good anecdote here that's easy for guys to relate to. So when I worked in the shop, most of the guys would bring their arrow in and say, you know, this is back when we shot aluminum, so I'm dating myself a little, but you know, they'd come in and say, hey, I'm shooting a 22-13, here's my arrow, it's 26 inches long, can you cut me 10 more, 12 more? So we'd say, you know, yes, and we'd do that. But when I have customers reach out to me now, and it's funny, a lot of them from the South, just about to the last one, does this. They say, they don't tell me what their draw length is. They don't tell me what weight they're pulling on their bow. They say, I shoot a 300, 27 inches long. What would you recommend? And you know, what I want guys to start to understand is that the arrow length should be the last thing you determine. It should be the last decision you make as you're choosing an arrow, because the arrow length is the easiest way to adjust the spine of an arrow. And so you have your static spine, and that's the 340 when you test it hanging on a weight. And then you have what's called dynamic spine, and that's how the arrow reacts, you know, under the load of the bow as the bow is shot, in conjunction with, you know, whatever weight is up front, the length of the arrow, things of that nature. So, you know, when guys start with the arrow length with me, it lengthens the conversation, if you will, because I have to back them up and get the information that I actually need. So what I would say is just, let's try to keep it real simple. Let's say that there's a guy that has a 27 inch draw. He's shooting 70 pounds. Okay. And, you know, out of a modern compound bow, and he wants to shoot, you know, 125 grain broadhead. Okay. So I'm going to do the calculation and say, okay, well, you probably need to shoot a 300 spine arrow, you know, cut to, which he's going to think I'm going to say, you know, of course, 27 inches because that's his draw length, or a little shorter. Well, I'm going to tell him you probably need to cut that arrow maybe as far out as 29, put a 50 grain outsert on it, or a 50 grain insert outsert component, whatever you want to call it. And that'll match up with your 125 head. So, and that throws guys a lot because they're thinking that their arrow should be the same length as their draw.
Mm-hmm.
But you can adjust that easily. But let's say that the guy says, okay, well, that's a 525 grain arrow. I really don't want to shoot something that heavy. Because again, the heavy arrow movement is a slow transition and people are not just jumping on board overnight.
Right.
They've just got to incrementally work their way up. So I'll say, okay, well, that's fine. I can do that. So what I'll do is back him up and say, okay, well, we're going to put you in a 350 spine arrow, which is a weaker arrow. But now we're going to cut it all the way back to 26, 3 inches shorter, and change that dynamic spine to accommodate the lighter spine arrow to get you a little more speed, a lighter weight arrow as well. So that does kind of go back to your the other number on the shaft,
mm-hmm.
the 10.2.
Right.
That is the grains per inch. So like our 350s are 10.2 grains per inch. The 300s are 11.2. So they're, one grain heavier per inch. Well, on a, 30 inch arrow, that's, 36 grains extra, more.
Right.
So it's more material to make the arrow stiffer. There's more wall thickness of carbon. So therefore the arrow is going to be heavier. So, if a guy wants to shoot a little lighter setup, he can go to a lighter, grain per inch arrow. But he can't cut it the same length because it's a different spine. And that's where the confusion comes in. So, I know you want to cover all the stuff in depth, but I've learned over the last, couple of years doing podcasts with guys that it's good to go into these details, but it's also good to leave a PowerPoint or a highlight list of items that at least they ingrain in their head and they understand. And I think that out of all that rambling I just did, the takeaway should be the arrow length is the last thing you determine because it's the easiest way to adjust spine.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and man, I really feel like most, and I can't speak for everybody, but most of the shops that I've talked with, okay, we are buying this equipment in hopes of harvesting a animal with it. Okay. And when I go out in the woods, I'm not saying, man, I hope I see that doe, or I'm saying, I hope I see 150 inch monster, which is big for East Texas. And yeah. Yeah. And it's like, I'm buying this equipment to pull off the shot. I'm practicing to pull off the shot. And for someone to just give me a random arrow to shoot without going through all this, because I'll be honest with you, arrow length, dude, the shops that I've been to, they'll have me draw back and they'll literally just mark on the arrow where it's a little bit past the rest. And they're not taking into effect the spine or anything.
No, I know.
And, that's what I'm wanting to get at from this podcast is we are wanting to take the life of an animal as quickly and as humanely as possible. You got to throw that in there because everybody will freak out if you talk about hunting without throwing that in there. But, we're doing all this and in hopes of seeing, like I said, this 150 inch deer, and we have, we spend $1,000 on a bow. We spend $100 to $200 on arrows, and here we are with something that isn't really set up for what we need to be, set up for our bow. We spent all this money, spent all this time practicing, and the arrow, which is one of the least expensive parts of our whole setup, is what is actually going to make the kill.
Yeah.
And it blows my mind that, not enough people take that seriously.
Well, I'll give you an example. why we were talking, I don't know, just while you were talking there, I don't know if you heard the little ding of my text message went off. But I'll read you the text. And this is from one of my oldest friends. We have hunted together for 28 years. We've hunted all over the world together. He has what we call in the South discretionary income. He can decide how and where he wants to spend money, to where most of us, our money's spent before we get it.
Right, so, right.
Yeah, so his text reads, can you send me a dozen of your fletched arrows? They're 29 inches long. I literally just got that while we were talking.
Right.
This guy hunts in my camp with me in Alabama. He's gone elk hunting, moose hunting, caribou hunting, done all these things with me. And he has never, ever, and I would tell him this, he's sitting right here, he's never taken the time to educate himself or invest the time to understand his equipment and know what he needs for himself. That is his knowledge of his archery equipment, is what brand bow he has. Everybody knows that. And how long his arrow is and what broadhead he shoots. And it's, you know, it's basically what broadhead he shoots until he loses the next animal. And then there's going to be a new broadhead.
Right.
Because the broadhead is the scapegoat of all lost and wounded animals. So
of course.
Yeah. So anyway, but that is his experience. He's a 50-year-old man that has killed a lot of animals and doesn't understand his equipment. And, you know, we've spent thousands of hours together in camp, and he's never absorbed a single thing. But that is, you know, the Southern hunter has never really been the hunter that is engaged on a year-round basis with their equipment.
Right. Right.
And I want to say that is something that is, you know, it's maybe born from the fact that we have very long seasons. We have, you know, liberal bag limits. We have good weather. I think we have a lot of year-round activities that we can do, hunting and fishing alike. So, you know, the Southern outdoorsman is not really spending a lot of time with his equipment. He's spending a lot of time actually, you know, doing the act of hunting.
Right.
Or being outside.
Right.
And so they've never really paid a lot of attention to it. And additionally, you know, a lot of the Southern hunters get a lot of opportunity. So, you know, blowing an opportunity on a great animal doesn't sting quite as much as a Western guy who gets one tag a year, a 3-week season, and it's over.
Yeah. And you mentioned something on a previous podcast that I listened to, and I wrote it down so I'd have a note. And it was to the effect of, you know, Western hunters have a very limited amount of shots that they take because their seasons are shorter. Bag limits are a lot more limited. You know, Eastern and Southern hunters, we got plenty of opportunities. And you said in the podcast that a lot of good Eastern hunters are now looking west for technology and techniques on harvesting because they realize, you know, I mean, I'm as guilty as anybody. I've fallen for, you know, marketing campaigns that these bow companies or arrow companies have put out there, and even broadhead companies. You know, of you buy this, it's going to be super lethal, you know. And then at one point in time, and I guess it's still this, I mean, it's still going on, but, you know, everybody was after speed. This bow is the fastest this year. You know, I hopped online before we got on the phone and I looked, and there's article after article after article, even in magazines like Outdoor Life, of the top, the fastest bow of 2019, the fastest bow of 2017. And every year they're coming out with some kind of article that says the fastest bow.
Right.
And, you know, although speed is good, I mean, you've proven, and a lot of guys have proven, that you can shoot a slower bow with the right arrow setup and, you know, a heavier arrow, and you're going to get, you know, a better results from it.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, a lot of guys that experience success in any kind of activity, hunting, business, whatever, across the board, most of them, you'll hear the same story. They got really lucky, and they were exposed to someone or something that gave them basically an advanced course in whatever they're engaging in. And so for me, it was kind of a two-pronged effect. I had, you know, a long tenure at an incredible outdoor company, our outdoor store running their archery shop. And I got to see the birth of the modern compound bow and modern arrow and all of that. But I also got to shoot thousands of bows, and understand, you know, arrow performance and dynamics. You just can't put a price on that. And then the other thing, is that I was exposed at a very early age, to a traditional bow, which most people do not. But Alabama, believe it or not, is a really big traditional archery state, has a lot of traditional archery heritage. Howard Hill is an Alabamian, Byron Ferguson, a lot of incredible traditional archers are from the state, and it's very popular here. So I got very lucky and was exposed to that and really, really took to it and just embraced that. And once you see what a trad bow can do with a heavy arrow going 160 feet per second, you kind of step back. It's almost like going back in time, and you look back at your compound setup and you go, what in the world was I thinking? I can take this same exact arrow that I'm shooting out of a longbow going 160 feet per second, put it in a compound, and increase the speed by 50%, you know, and shoot something in that, you know, 240 range. Nothing will ever get away from me. It's a recipe for, you know, success on a very high level. Well, you know, if I would have not been exposed to a trad bow, I probably wouldn't have understood the dynamics of a heavy arrow. And you know, and most people really don't ever really get an opportunity to shoot a trad bow and get exposed to it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm going off of y'all's experience shooting those trad bows. I mean, I shot a trad bow when I was a lot younger, but you know, I mean, I shoot a compound now, but that the heavy arrow movement, you know, it seems like it's come, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's come from those trad guys, which have probably been doing it for a long, long, long time without ever talking about it.
Yeah, it has. It's come from the trad community, and, you know, and there was always, you know, everybody is in a camp in the South, you know, whether they own it, lease it, whatever, everybody has a group that they share time with and fellowship with and hunt together. And because the social aspect of hunting in the South is probably my favorite part of hunting. It's almost the animal is secondary, you know?
Yeah.
And so everybody that listens to this can immediately think back and say, you know, every camp I was ever in, there was always that one guy that, you know, always year after year put big deer and a lot of deer on the ground, you know. And there was always that one guy that every year he'd get a good buck with his bow, where everybody else would hunt, you know, the two or three times during bow season and then grab the rifle.
Right.
That's just the way it is. But if you look back and think about that guy, he was very detail oriented. Everything he did, I guarantee you, was detail oriented. His gear, his stand placement, the way he hunted, you know, his bow setup, his arrow setup, his rifle setup. And most of those guys that were successful and really obsessed over it, even back then, they were shooting a heavier arrow.
Yeah.
They understood the value of it. And so, however you come to the understanding, whether it's through a trad bow or listening to a podcast or hearing it just from somebody else or a mentor or whatever, once people get to that point, I really feel like they'll embrace it and understand it and realize that until we create a bow that goes 1,100 feet per second, speed is really not the most important thing. You're not going to change the outcome of a measurable impact point on a dropping whitetail with 20 feet per second.
Yeah.
You're not going to change. It's not measurable. So it may be the difference of a quarter inch, you know, higher or lower with regards to impact on a dropping animal. So, and I've done the math on it. I can't, you know, regurgitate it now, but it is literally a moot point.
Yeah. Well, in a lot of archery shops want to focus on kinetic energy because
which is a measurable for a rifle bullet.
Yes, they want to exactly, and that was kind of what I was going to get at. But they want to measure on kinetic energy, which I'm not 100% sure, but I think it's something like feet per second squared times arrow weight divided by some
802,000 something like that.
Yeah, something like that. But what that is that's the kinetic energy at the point of impact on the animal's skin. And it
that's what's creating the shock wave, if you will, or transferring of energy from the bullet to the animal.
Yes, but it doesn't take into effect momentum, which is what we as bow hunters are wanting, correct? I mean, that's what it's all about is getting that penetration even to the point of a pass-through, because I can't remember who said it, but someone says two holes are always better than one.
I've said it a million times.
Well, it might have been you. Yeah. But you know, you watch these hunting shows, and in my office, I got a TV in there, and it's always on a hunting channel or a hunting show or whatever, and I'm working, and I'll look up every now and then, and you see these guys take these shots at deer and a whitetail. I'm not talking about elk or moose. I'm just talking about whitetail right now. And it looks like they get 4 inches of penetration on this deer.
Right.
And, dude, I mean, you can't tell me that that's a lot better than a pass-through or you know, what you would get with shooting a heavier arrow. I mean, it's. I think we've established a point that heavier arrows are definitely the way to go. Can you talk a little bit, you know, we're saying heavier arrows. Can we talk a little bit about, and it's been beat to death. I'm sorry, but some of our listeners may not have really heard about it, but can we talk a little bit about front of center and how, the weight up front can help with that momentum?
If we have to.
Well, just for a minute.
I'm just giving you a hard time. Yeah, everybody loves talking about it because it's such a contentious point. And you know, I am not against a weight up front at all. I'm not against a good amount of weight up front. It certainly helps stabilize an arrow quickly. It does help it recover quickly. But it's not the end all be all. And if you go a little too far, you know, down the path and put too much weight up front, what you end up with is you end up with a top effect, you know, like a spinning top, like a kid's toy.
Right.
So you spin that top and it's just like a spinning arrow. And it flies perfect, you know, and they're just amazing to watch and they're spinning tight. But the second that it slows down or it bumps into something, anything changes in that spin, it goes haywire. It just wobbles out of control because it's so unbalanced. So with regards to high FOC, it's wonderful in perfect conditions. It works really well as far as a heavy front, light end, the light rear end is really not having to do a whole lot. And long story short,
what's the best?
I'm sorry, I got derailed there for a second. So long story short, you know, what you're running into is something that if it experiences, like we do in the South, limbs, branches, brush, whatever on the way to the deer, it's going to react violently. You know, it's going to, the tail end is going to kick out so hard before it controls. Well, it can certainly control itself and regain control, but what if it doesn't in the time before it makes impact? And if it doesn't, what you run into is, the arrow hitting the animal at an angle.
Right.
To where the head may hit where you want it to, but the nock may be way over to the left, right, up, or down. And if that energy is not focused directly behind that head and that arrow is not spinning perfectly and tight, it doesn't really matter how much it weighs. It doesn't matter how much you paid for your broadheads. Doesn't matter how much your bow costs, how fast it's going. If the arrow hits at an angle, you're not going to get penetration.
Right.
And that's what you're seeing on television. You're not seeing faulty products and, you know, poor design products, things like that. For the most part, you're seeing fairly, very poorly tuned bows that are not flying true. If you want to watch guys that shoot through stuff, even with mechanicals, which I just don't care for, but if you watch like the Bone Collector guys, and I know that they're very commercial,
right?
And I don't really like that side of hunting as much, but if you watch those guys shoot and shoot a lot of animals, they get a lot of pass-throughs.
Yeah.
And they get a lot of pass-throughs because Travis and those guys are obsessive over tuning their bows and making sure they're getting perfect arrow flight. They understand that arrow flight is the key. And so you look at a lot of these other guys, if you really watch, especially when they do their slow motion shots, the arrow's flying at an angle. And, it's not ever going to penetrate regardless. I hope that's answering your question.
No, it is. It completely is. Because,
yeah,
you know, that's another thing that we don't think about is the arrow flight, and you need that energy to be transferred in a direct line rather than at an angle. I mean, you're exactly right. And, you know, T-Bone's been on the show and he's talked about his extensive tuning and all that. You know, I mean, it makes perfect sense. If we are, so front of center is not necessarily the answer, which there was a time where people talked it up so much, and, you know, we're going to go extreme front of center and all this kind of stuff. What do you think, if we have our bow tuned up in a perfect manner, what does our arrow setup need to look like?
Well, if you're asking me for a percentage of front of center, a percentage of weight forward, I'll never give you that.
Right.
It's going to vary from setup to setup. So let's talk about another point that we want people to take away from this. One of them is arrow length should be the last thing that you determine.
Okay.
Another more broad, 30,000 foot view philosophy and a takeaway here is that one size does not fit all, especially with regards to archery. So you can't put every single shooter in a box and apply the same formulas to them. You can't take a guy with a 31 inch draw shooting 70 pounds and give him the same ratio and formulas to determine what he needs to shoot as a guy with a 27 inch draw shooting 70 pounds. I know they're shooting the same weight, but that's two totally different performance spectrums. It's night and day difference. You're talking about probably 30 feet per second difference in performance. So it's one of the takeaways is it's not a one size fits all. So let's talk about a female or youth archer.
they're going to be shooting a 25, 26 inch draw. They're not going to be generating a lot of energy. They're going to have the benefit of having let off, which is great. But they're really not going to be generating much more speed than a really high performance trad boat.
Yeah.
Okay. So, so what you want to do with them is that you want to create a little bit heavier aero for them. You want to treat a youth or a female short draw, low pounded shooter more like a trad bow setup. And so you're going to put a little more weight up front, because you're going to use that to increase the aero weight two ways. Number one, you're putting more weight up there, but number two, when you add more weight up front, you weaken the spine so you can go up to a heavier spine arrow that you would normally not shoot out of a 26 inch draw, 50 pound bow. You may shoot up, a 500 spine arrow out of it. But if you put 100 grain outsert and 100 grain broadhead and you put 200 grains up front, it's going to weaken that 500 spine too much, but it's going to let you bump up to a 400 spine or a 350, which is heavier grains per inch. And now you've taken that weight up front and you've used it as a tool to get a heavier spine arrow and more overall weight. And you can, shoot a, I'll tell you this. I mean, anybody with a draw length less than, 26 and under, they pretty much need to be shooting 10 grains per pound. So if they shoot a 25 inch draw, let's say it's a female and she's shooting 50 pounds, I'd set her up with a 500 grain arrow.
Yeah,
which is what I shoot out of a 68 pound boat. So, or 520, but what you're doing is you're taking the weight calculation and you're running it way up. Because the speed calculation is going to be way down. So weight is a larger factor on momentum than speed, where speed is a larger multiplier on kinetic energy than weight.
Right.
So two different schools of thought. So we're trying to create momentum for those low pounded shooters. Now, as you move up into a more, like say an average guy that's shooting 28 inches, 70 pounds, you can still shoot that same weight arrow because you've got a good heavy projectile. You can still shoot a 500 grain arrow and get more in that, 8 grains per pound type scenario. And shoot up, 520, 540 grain arrow. And you've got a really good efficient model to where the energy from the bow is putting 95% of its energy into the arrow. And it's just super efficient. You got great trajectory, good speed. The bow's performing properly. If you shot a really light arrow out of that bow, it's going to be loud. Well, the reason it's loud is because the bow is putting, 30-40% of its energy back into the bow itself, into
right.
the limbs, the strings, in the form of vibration and harmonics. So when you hear that, it's not a good thing. It's a loud bow is a function of lost energy and lost efficiency.
Yeah.
That's kind of the model I use. An average guy would try to stick to that 8 grains per pound. If you shoot 70 pounds and you've got a 29, 30 inch draw, you're going to shoot 560, 540 grains. Again, one size doesn't fit all. So as you drop and you get to a guy like me, that's a 28 inch draw length. Well, if a 30 inch draw guy should shoot 560, 8 grains per pound, a 29 inch draw is not creating the same amount of energy. So you could drop him down to 540. I am a 28. I'm even less amount of energy. So I drop to 520 and I keep a very efficient setup and it just kind of drops from there. And so that's a good rule of thumb for your average guys listening to this. Try to stay in that 8 grains per pound and get a very, very properly spined, match arrow to your setup. And then for youth and female shooters or low pounded short draw shooters, try to creep more towards that 10 grain per pound, raise your weight factor on your calculation because your speed and energy factor is way lower and there's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah.
You can't adjust that. So I know that's probably not the simple redneck version you were looking for.
Well, I don't. I think what I'm trying to get at is there is no simple, and it's a lot more thorough than what a lot of people realize or are doing to set up their bows. I mean, you think you got it paper tuned and you got an arrow that was off the shelf and you're out there, you know, trying to harvest an animal and hopefully one of a lifetime. And there's
or kill an animal.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot more to it than that. You know, what I want to do real quick, and I may not have all the information that you need, but let's just, and you've kind of covered it a little bit, but so I'm a 30 inch draw.
Right, and you're the guy we all hate,
sir.
I said you're the guy we all hate.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm a 30 inch draw. I'm shooting 69 pounds.
Yep.
Out of my bow. Kind of walk me through, you know, what I need to look for in a spine and all that good stuff.
Yeah. So, 30 inch draw, 69 pounds. You know, I would be trying to hit that 540 to 550 grain total arrow weight.
Okay.
So, because you're basically, 70 pounds would be a 560 grain arrow. Your 69s, so that would be a 550 grain arrow. Don't get too caught up on the exact number.
Yeah.
It's more important to get the proper spine and the best arrow flight. Just try to start with the math to get a combination that's going to get you close to that.
Okay.
Here's another takeaway. 20 or 30 grains is never going to affect the outcome of your hunt.
Right.
And your success. Do not get caught up in that. That's for sure. I hope people understand that. I have guys that obsess over, like, you know, our components are some of them are 55 grains, not 50. Depending on the size, and they panic because their arrow is 5 grains too heavy.
Yeah.
The greatest shooters in the world do not worry about 10 to 20 grains. So there's no reason to stress over 5. So 20 grains is never going to make a difference as long as you're getting excellent arrow flight. So to your question, we're going to start with a 300 spine arrow. Okay. And you're what, 30 inch draw?
Mm-hmm.
So you're generating a lot of energy there, even though it's not crazy high poundage, because that long draw creates a great power stroke.
Right.
So I would probably start at 29 inches. What I would tell you is that I would probably start at 29 inches. I would use a 50 grain outsert. I'd use a 125 grain head. That's going to put you 175 up front, moderate, you know, decent point weight up front, nothing crazy. I would configure my fletching or add a wrap. I'd either do a four fletch or I would add a wrap to try to add another 10 grains to the rear of the arrow.
Okay.
It's going to bump your weight up a little bit, number one. Number two, as you add weight to the front, it weakens the spine. As you add weight to the rear, it stiffens it.
Right.
So I would say I would build a 29-inch arrow, 50-grain outsert, 125-grain head. I would probably put a wrap on it and three-fletch it, and you're going to have about a 545-grain arrow.
There you go.
So now you're going to have a super efficient match for spine and weight to your bow. And so you've accomplished two things, and now you've got a great, you know, pretty moderately weighted arrow, you know, on the heavy side. You combine that with the energy that a long draw guy like yourself does, with 30 inches, you know, you've got a pretty deadly setup. You're going to be shooting the same type of speed and trajectory, with a 545 grain arrow that a guy like me with a 28 inch draw, would get at the same poundage with a 500 grain arrow. So you're able to shoot a heavier arrow and maintain the same speed and trajectory that the shorter draw guys have. And that's the advantage that longer draw guys have.
Gotcha. Well, dude, a lot of information. And again, I think the main takeaway is that it's not as simple as going and grabbing a handful of arrows at Academy or wherever and throwing some 100 grain mechanicals on it and rocking and rolling, which I'm sure there's guys out there that the stars have aligned perfectly and they've shot some massive animals with that setup. But you know what I mean? It's we need to be responsible enough to make sure that all the money we're spending on gear is not, you know, screwed up because of not paying attention to this kind of stuff. That's kind of my whole, that's what I wanted to project here today. Tell me a little bit kind of about day six and why you started it, why you wanted to start it, what y'all's goals are. I mean, just tell us a little bit about the company and, you know, what all y'all offer and all that good stuff.
Sure. Oh yeah, sure. So I had a goal. I worked about 5 years in the hunting and fishing store there when I was in high school and college. And, I wanted to make, my life, I wanted to center my life and how I made a living around the outdoors hunting. It didn't necessarily have to be hunting and fishing, because I like to fish as much as I like to hunt. But that's what I wanted to do. But having that opportunity to work in that store, I saw that the guys that worked in the store, like myself, hell, we never could go hunting because we were always open on the weekends and work late evenings, and retail is a hard business. And yeah, even though I was in the hunting industry, which I don't like the hunting, the word industry is combined with hunting, but
yeah,
it is what it is. But while I was doing that for a living, I didn't have time to actually go hunting. So I figured out pretty quick, you know, you're sitting in that store and you're watching the guys that are coming in from elk hunts, and they're doctors, lawyers, business owners, professionals. They're motivated guys. They work really hard, and they play really hard. But they put themselves in a position to call their own shots and dictate their own schedule. And then they have, you know, what we call in the South is disposable income or discretionary income. So I realized real quick that, you know, it was that being in the shop was not going to be, you know, my ticket to getting outside and basically living outdoors.
Right.
I was going to have to become a responsible adult, which I was dreading.
Yeah.
listen, I've got 40 something year old friends that are still not adults, but I realized I was going to have to do that. So my family's been in the construction business. I swore I'd never have anything to do with it. My dad passed away when he was 41 years old. I was 42. I was 21. And so a lot of these decisions kind of got thrust at me, you know, pretty quickly. And so I went into the construction industry so I could work for myself, dictate my own hours, and try to generate the income needed to hunt, because whether you like it or not, it's expensive. So, yeah. So anyway, that's what I did. And I always had a goal, that by the time I was 50, I would be out of construction or whatever I was doing. And I would be transitioning into a quality of life mode, type of business. I always want to work. And so that was kind of my plan. And this opportunity to do this arrow business, it really just fell in my lap. I had been shooting these shafts that were from a company in Australia that a friend of mine owned. They came up with these shafts over there back in 2014, and they were just amazing. And they just, you know, Brian, with, you know, your background and as much hunting as you've done, and some of your friends that you have in the hunting space, you know, you really need to be representing this company in the States. And so I finally caved and said, heck, I could do this and slowly start tapering my business down, my construction business, and maybe over the next 4 or 5 years, you know, get it to where it was something that we could build on. And I could, you know, slowly transition away from the construction industry. So in the middle of all this, I you know, said, hey, if we're going to do this, you know, I want to redesign the component system. I want to redesign the fletchings, the knock. I want to redesign everything. The product is 80% there. If I'm going to do it and be a part of it, I want to take it the other 20. And they said, go for it. So that's what I did. I started working, you know, to design our component systems and things like that, or just improve upon them, you know, and everything that goes with the Aero, and then how the Aero was built. And in the interim, these guys just decided, heck, man, we're going to go into the kangaroo beef jerky or kangaroo jerky business.
Nice.
Yeah. And basically just said, hey, you know, you've done more with this in the last few months than we've done in 3 years. We're just going to sell you this company. And I said, well, man, I'm not in the position to just drop what I'm doing and do this. And I did a lot of soul searching, and I'll be honest with you, I had a, I've got an incredible wife, an incredible supportive wife. And she said, you know, this is what I have wanted for you the last 10 years, as I watch you age drastically in the construction industry. This is what you're good at. This is what you love. This is what I want you to do. I don't care if we take our income and cut it by, you know, cut it by 75%. I don't care. I want you to do this. So, you know, I took it on and bought the company out of Australia, brought it to the States, rebranded it as Day Six with all of our new, basically the new design product, the way I wanted it done, and just got really lucky. I had some really good friends, that had already seen the product. They understood it. They were in the hunting space already. They had, you know, confidence in me and what we were doing. So, you know, they helped jump on board and started shooting them and promoting them and, you know, getting the message out there, which is usually the hardest part of any new company, is just getting the message out. Even with social media as accessible as it is, it's so much faster curve, you know, if it's an organic growth by people that already have, you know, people's ear and their trust. So anyway, it just has really taken off. I'm blown away. It is an incredible amount of work, but I'm absolutely loving it. And it's just gonna, you know, it's just kind of accelerated that 5-year plan to a 2-year plan now, to where we're transitioning out of construction now and going and doing this full time.
Yeah. Well, you guys do arrows. We've talked a lot about arrows. I know you guys do broadheads as well. Tell us a little bit about your broadheads.
Yeah. So, we just released the broadheads, middle of May. And, it was something that I had intentions to do from the beginning. I did not have any intentions of doing it this fast, but every single customer that calls, they talk to me. I answer the phone. I'm the customer service guy. If something's wrong, I'm the guy you yell at, and I'm the guy that apologizes and makes it right. If you need help with your setup, I'm the guy that you talk to. It's kind of a one-man show right now. And so, you know, 60-70% of the guys that are calling me looking for help, you know, to get themselves where they want to be with their setup, they're all asking the same question, you know, what broadhead do you shoot? And
I'm not going to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, I just, you know, I'm saying, well, I shoot this and that and this and that. I mean, I shot all kinds of stuff, you know? And so, you know, me and some of my friends and the guys that's helped me with Day Six, you know, we sat around and talked about our perfect head. And gosh, man, you know, we were all kind of singing the same tune. You know, we all, you know, a dozen of us love this head. We love this head, and we love this head. We wish that this one had that, and that one had this, and then this one was, you know, if somebody would only build a broadhead that had this and use this material and this shape. And it was basically this metamorphosis of all the things that we liked and loved to use over 30, 35 years of bow hunting.
You know, it kind of came into this design, and I thought, shoot, man, if I'm going to do this, I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to go all in. And so I started the production process on getting these things made, and it was an absolute pain in the butt.
I can imagine.
It was so hard to get these things made because, believe it or not, most of your broadheads that in the you know, bow hunting space right now, man, most of them are made in the same place.
Wow.
I mean, they're all coming out of the same factories. It's a very incestuous industry with regards to you know, where these products are made, and the same company making a lot for this one and that one, and you know, as a result of that, the pricing is all kind of out of whack. You know, it's you know, they're used to guys coming to them wanting 500 heads at a time. So I was sitting there, you know, so they price that accordingly. It's an economy of scale, of course, you know. So I just went outside the industry and started looking at other companies that make similar products, like for medical and things like that, to try to source a higher end material. The material we wanted to use, nobody wanted to use it. It was too expensive, too hard to get. So, you know, I went to the material supplier. We use Crucible Industries, S30B Steel, which Crucible makes lots of different steels. That's one of their premier blade steels. And so I went to them and said, hey, you know I'm small potatoes. I'm an end user. You don't deal with end users. You sell to manufacturers. I'm not the guy you want to be talking to. I understand that. But I'm not going to stop calling until you help me. So tell me who makes these kind of products and who you would recommend. And they started saying, hey, you ought to talk to this person, that person. And they helped me go, you know, to some different companies. And the people were like, yeah, we can certainly build these broadheads for you. But, you know, we have 50,000 part minimums.
Yeah.
We don't have, you know, 500 part minimums. So, you know, I begged, bartered, and stole, and, you know, begged and pleaded and whatever, and worked out deals with some of these people to make, you know, 25,000 instead of 50, and was able to get really incredible products, but at a reasonable price. Now, I know people are going to look at these heads and go, they're $89 for three. What planet are you on that's reasonable? And I mean, I used to buy six Thunderheads for $30. So this is crazy. But once you start looking at what these things are made out of, you know, titanium and S30V, you know, tempered tool steel, and
right,
the processes that they go through to get sharpened, and it's just the design itself is so intricate as far as the tooling goes. It's really not that expensive once you compare it to the broadheads that are in that really high end, you know, custom boutique, if you will, you know, space. So that's what we did. I really got kind of caught up in it and got really passionate about it, and had a lot of opportunities to just kind of cut corners and say, you know what, this material is a lot easier to get. It's readily available. We can get it made anywhere, get it made overseas, like most people do. But I just wasn't going to back down. I wanted S30V steel. I wanted titanium ferrules on some of them. I wanted a certain design that was going to require a certain type of machine to mill it. And I just wasn't going to back off till I got what I wanted. And that's why it took so dang long. But
yeah.
But we've got them, and man, I'm blown away with what we're selling. It's quite overwhelming, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, tell everybody how they can get a hold of you and or check out your products. You know, because we talked a lot in the first of this episode about just all kinds of aero specs and everything else. And I'm sure, like I said, we the main point of this podcast is to show everybody that it's not as simple as just going and grabbing a handful of arrows and go. And I'm sure we confused the hell out of most of the listeners. So they're going to need to talk to you in order to figure out exactly what they need. So tell them how to get a hold of you.
Yeah, well,
the easiest, best way is to reach us through the website. It's just Day Six Gear. When you go to the message section there, it automatically has things to fill out there. You know, what your draw length is, your draw weight of your bow, and is it a traditional bow or a compound? And do you have broadheads already, like in a certain weight? So when you send me an email, before I even read it, I can go through and say, okay, it's just like a tailor, you know, fitting a suit.
Yeah.
Here's the specs. Here's the sizes. I know where to start. And then I can go through and read the email and try to get a good grasp of, you know, the type of hunting that the guy is doing or that he or she is doing and what their goals are. And believe it or not, in just a few sentences, most people tell you what they really like. Some guys like a little more speed. Some guys like real heavy arrows. Some guys like a lot of weight up front. And you can basically, you know, go through and interpret that pretty quickly and provide them something that they need. And then, of course, you can call us on our line. I'm going to answer the phone, you know, and I may not be able to convey the technical side of it as well as some others. I may struggle delivering, you know, the technical message, but I can certainly help guys get what they need and you know, what is going to help them be successful with regards to how we feel a successful, you know, consistent arrow bow setup should be. And are we right? Who knows? That's just what's worked for us, you know.
Well, and it goes back to what I said at the first of the show. I mean, you've put a lot of animals on the ground, and so that experience in what works, you know, and I know it just works for you, but it puts animals on the ground, dude. So, I take everything that you said, you know, seriously and to heart. And just so you know, I shoot a 300 spine arrow right now with a 3-fletch with a wrap on it. But I'm only shooting 100 grains with a 50 grain insert instead of 125. So I'm almost there, dude.
Yeah, well, you're close, you know, and I don't know your bow or anything like that.
Right.
And it may shoot great. And again, remember what I said, 20 or 30 grains are not going to change your success rate.
Right.
That's not what you want to obsess over. What you want to obsess over is perfect arrow flight.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that's totally off base here before we wrap up, I'm sure you guys.
No, I'm wide open. I'm good, man.
Okay. So another takeaway here is that, you know, you're going to go through different processes to tune your bow. But one of the most common things in the shop that is accessible to most people that have a shop nearby is paper tuning.
Right.
And paper tuning is a great starting point. And for a lot of people, it's as good as they ever want to get or need to get. Okay. If you're never going to shoot over 40 yards, you can paper tune your bow and be good to go. If you're going to shoot long distances like the Western guys do, most of the Western guys do, they're shooting different animals. They're shooting different terrain. It's a different setup, totally different thing. You know, they're going to be a little more speed conscious, things of that nature. So they're going to be more focused on their tune at 70 and 80 and their grouping at 70 and 80, where the Southern guys really don't get into all that much.
Right.
So paper tuning is a great tool for the average guy. It's what I probably did for, you know, 25 years. Just in the last 4 or 5 years have I started group tuning at long distances. Not that I would ever take a shot, you know, at 80 yards, but you know what I'm saying? I practice group tuning at that distance, so the 40 becomes like somebody's average 20.
Right,
shot.
Right.
So anyway, so the takeaway here, though, is if you go to paper tune your bow and you shoot 3 arrows and you have 3 different tears, it is not the bow, it is not the arrow, it is you. And until you can shoot the same hole, the same tear every shot, there's really no reason to, you know, dive off into trying to, you know, micro adjust your arrow and broadhead setup and your bow setup. You've got to work on your shooting first. So that takeaway is you've got to have a consistent hole through paper before you start making adjustments. That's super important.
Yeah.
So what'll happen is you'll go into certain shops. I'm not saying they're all this way, but you'll rear back, shoot it through paper. They'll go, okay, 2-inch left tear, move your rest over, see you later.
Brian, most of the shops around here will shoot your bow for you when they're paper tuning it.
Yeah, well, that doesn't work. So, because the next thing I'm going to say is that the devil for bow hunters, trad bow or compound, that I've found is the grip hand. The grip hand as it relates to bow torque. And that is where I have had struggles in the past. And I see so many others have struggles in the past tuning their bow. You've got to be able to find a grip, you know, a way that your hand rests on that grip that does not manipulate that bow left and right. And once you can consistently shoot a bullet hole through paper and your grip hand is not affecting that hole shot after shot after shot, until you get there, there's really no reason getting off into micro tuning.
Yeah.
But that is a big takeaway that people should have, is really focus on their grip hand. If you're not shooting well, two things are happening. You're basically punching the trigger and snatching it, or you're having a grip hand induced bow torque. And that is the most common, you know, two flaws in bow hunting, especially with compound guys. So once you get your shooting down first, then circle back and start trying to be, you know, super analytical and hyper-focused on your gear. So I think that's an important thing for people to think about.
No, it absolutely is. I mean, again, we're just chipping off at things that people, you know, probably do all the time that affects their hunt being successful or not, in hopes of becoming a better hunter. I mean, that's what it's about. That's why I wanted you on the show. It's just there's so many variables that we spend all this money on a bow, and you know, we don't pay attention to all these things, our grip, our arrows, our broadheads, our, you know, whatever. It's conveying the message of all the things to do to become a more successful hunter. And,
that's it. The difference between successful hunters that are consistently successful, the only difference is those guys capitalize on their opportunities.
Yes.
That's the difference. Everybody gets good opportunities. It's who capitalize on them consistently. You know, I help my uncle that hunts with me a lot. He's a great story. He was 10 years older than I was. And he and I kind of grew up together, more like brothers, because he was my mom's baby brother. He never wanted to hunt. It was all sports, water sports, you know, things like that, motorcycles. Didn't have any intention, you know, any interest in hunting. And his son brought him into hunting. Now, he grew up in a hunting family. We hunted our ass off, but he just never had any intentions of interest in going. But his son came along, and all his son wanted to do and still wants to do at 30 years old is hunt. So he brought his dad into it later in life, and I've never seen anyone just take to it so late in life, and he's just totally consumed with it now. And this is, you know, gosh, 20 years now he's been, you know, a hunter. So as he got into archery hunting, I started helping him get his setup going and his tune. And he would come over to my shop and we'd shoot through the paper. He couldn't get a consistent hole. And I'd say, hey, not fooling with arrows today, not fooling with the bow. Take the bow home, shoot it. Don't come back until you're, you know, shooting consistently, shooting in the same place. I don't care if it's 6 inches right. Just make sure it's in the same place.
Right.
Get consistent. And then come back and we'll tune your bow. No, I want to do it now while I'm here. I don't have time. Like, go shoot your bow, learn how to shoot it, come back, and then we'll talk about equipment.
Yeah.
And that is what, you know, frustrates a lot of guys, because I just, you know, we're talking about Southern guys. They pick their bow up October 1st. They shoot it a couple of times. They go up to the archery shop and grab some arrows. And October 15th, they're in a stand.
Yeah.
And they've shot less than 100 arrows through the bow over a 2-week period. So, you know, you're never going to be successful if you invest that little bit of effort into it. But if you'll put a little effort into it and actually shoot and understand, you know, what it takes to get a consistent shot, it's going to be like a light switch goes off. I mean, it's going to be automatic. So when that deer comes through and he gets inside your, you know, your effective range, your zone, you know, the kill zone, it's going to happen very consistently, you know, at a high level.
Yeah.
And people are going to just, it's literally like getting hit over the head with a hammer once you figure it out. And then you're going, man, now you start thinking about it back over the last 15, 20 years and all the deer that you shot over, shot under, made bad shots on, going, God, if I would have just done this, then, man, I wouldn't have any room left on the wall.
Yeah.
You know? So anyway, that's, man, if we can get some guys over here on this side of the river down here in the South to start really picking up on, getting dialed in on their archery equipment, regardless of how well day six does, I would just feel like that would be a great accomplishment in itself.
No, I agree completely, man. I agree completely. And I know, we got a camp, just like you were talking about. Everybody's got a camp. We got a camp, and it's kind of the same thing. I mean, we show up ready to go, and, you know, some people hadn't shot more than 100 arrows, and they're shooting stuff that's, you know, 10 years old that they've never done
it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know,
yeah.
It's definitely interesting to say the least, but,
yeah, for sure.
I need to get one of those guys to give you a call, and I'm sure you will call and thank me for that. That'll be a interesting conversation for sure. So,
yeah. Well, look, man, I'm always happy to talk with you guys. I really appreciate what y'all are doing, and I wish there were more good podcasts in the South. The Western guys really embrace the off season. They embrace the shooting and the discussion and the gear. And I think it falls back like what we mentioned earlier. You know, they have such a short window to actually hunt, you know, to where we get to hunt a lot, you know.
Yeah.
And it's funny when the Western guys come down to the camp in Alabama to hunt with me, they come in, they eat, they go out in the yard and they're shooting.
Yeah.
My guys never shoot their bow.
Yeah. We eat and then we watch football.
Oh, you damn right. Roll Tide.
Yep. So,
yeah,
no, you're exactly right. I mean, you really, really are. They got all those total archery challenges and everything else that they're doing. And, you know, right now we're running trot lines and catching bass and, you know,
heck yeah,
watching some baseball. So it's just kind of, it's crazy. And that's another deal, you know, of what you said and what I read is, you know, we all as hunters, no matter where we're located, we need to take the best from every area and try to apply it to our areas in order to become better hunters. Because, you know, if you're a better hunter, you're going to enjoy it more. You're going to tell more people about it. It's going to get more people involved in the outdoors, and it's just going to make for a better world altogether. So,
I think so. And I mean, you know, I'd love to see the image of the Southern hunter slowly change and have a little bit of a metamorphosis over time to where. It's more of a gentleman style hunt. It's a fellowship, camaraderie, social style hunt, but also very effective hunters. I can tell you this. I we've been kind of bashing on all of our Southern brethren here for an hour as far as their inability to spend time setting their gear up. I will say this, that the guys that are pretty efficient and proficient hunters in the South, I can pretty much take them anywhere and put them heads up against any Western hunter, and 9 times out of 10, they are going to be more effective.
Yeah.
We are exposed to so many more wildlife and game interactions than they are.
Right.
we've had so many more opportunities to shoot arrows and bullets through game, that you just can't, there's no measurable there, for the amount of time and practice that and experience that we've had as Southern hunters compared to the Western guys. So, I mean, I've taken, you know, six Alabama guys, you know, out to Colorado elk hunting. You know, we all six killed elk and pulled elk off this place. And the people we were hunting with were like, we've never killed more than two in a week.
Yeah.
And in 4 days, I mean, you guys are pouring brown water drinks, you know, watching, you know, Alabama football.
Yep.
So, it's because the guys capitalize on their opportunities. I mean, you know, there were six hunters there. My uncle, was the only one that missed. And then 2 days later he killed a bull.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was six hunters, seven shots and six bulls. So, you know, Mississippi, Louisiana, Texas, Florida, there's some stone cold killers in Florida.
Yeah, there sure is.
Whew. Georgia, I mean, all these southern states, I mean, you put these guys within range of an animal, and if they've spent a little time understanding their equipment, it's pretty much that deal's going to get closed.
Yeah.
That's just, you know, how these guys are. So I don't want it to sound like it's all bad. I mean, there's some sure enough predators down here.
Yeah. Well, it just goes back to making sure that our gear's tuned so that if we have a shot that's not that 30-yard chip shot or whatever it is, that we're set up for it. You know, I mean, that's all I'm trying to get at is let's pay attention a little bit more to our gear and
sure. Make
sure that it matches, you know, our skill level, I guess you could say, and kind of like what you're talking about, you know, I mean,
sure. We
just, I've had gear failure before. Last year, real quickly,
I'm in no rush. Go right ahead.
I was bow hunting this little piece of land that's probably 10 minutes from my house. This elderly gentleman, I saw him at the convenience store. I live in a real small town or community. I know everybody. I saw him at the convenience store and he's like, man, come out. I got deer all over the place. I need to thin the herd a little bit, come out and, you know, shoot you a doe or whatever. And, so I went out there and it was funny cause I had this little Instagram story series called the Battle of the Does, because these damn does, man, I mean, there were so many deer, Brian, that I'd be sitting in a stand and there'd be like 12 does walk out in a area that's 50 foot by 50 foot in a little opening. And with that many eyes, dude, you ain't getting much off, you know? And after a couple of hunts, they knew I was there all the time and they'd walk out and start looking at me. And so I swapped up tactics and I got on the ground and put up some burlap, just old redneck style, man. And yeah. They came back out and I drew back and shot and my broadhead clipped the top of the burlap and shot right over one of them. And so it's that kind of crap, you know, that I wasn't paying attention. And although it wasn't, you know, a $100 broadhead or anything like that, I mean, it was a $5 piece of burlap, which screwed me because I wasn't paying attention.
Well, you know what? Even when you pay attention, best laid plans, shit's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you that I was in Africa one year and I really wanted to try to shoot an eland with my longbow, which is a gigantic animal. I think they're one of the largest, or if not the largest, ungulate on the planet. I may be wrong about that. But anyway, definitely the largest deer species, I mean, I guess. So, but anyway, long story short, you know, a longbow is a bit cumbersome, especially in a blind. And so I had checked this blind, like every angle, every possible scenario, everything, to where I knew that my top limb was not going to hit the top of the blind.
Right.
Even to the point to where I was going out there and shooting, like taking different practice shots out of the blind at termite mounds. And so had everything just totally perfect set, ready to go. Every T crossed, I dotted, no problems. So the second day, we knew that there was two big bulls coming in. It's just, what can you ever get one in the daylight? They're just like our stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And right before dark one evening, I heard the sound of their knees click, just like an elk or a moose, they click. And I heard their knees clicking. And on a giant eland, it's very loud. And I literally looked at my nephew, who had a video camera, and I just said, "Is that camera on?" He said, "Yes." I reached over, pushed the record button. It was that loud. And the next thing I know, the window of the blind was all I could see was legs and the bottom of a belly. This bull stepped out at, I don't know, 3 yards.
Good grief.
And couldn't shoot him.
Yeah.
He was too close.
Yeah.
And it had been blowing like hell that day. So I think that's the only thing that saved us. It was basically blowing like crazy where they couldn't smell us. And they stood there a while. Another bull was behind. And so this bull goes on past and starts going, you know, down towards the river where he was headed. And then the other bull comes and he's like 4 yards farther out. He's perfect. He's like 7 yards. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is a complete and utter layup. And I draw back and shoot, and I put my top limb of my recurve through the roof of that blind.
Oh,
and the arrow flew out and hit the eland literally completely sideways, like up and down. The arrow was up and down. It hit him sideways and just like whacked against the side of him and fell to the ground. Like the knock almost hit before the head did. And it just hit him sideways, fell to the ground, and they ran off. We never saw him again. And I had never practiced shooting up.
Yeah.
Because you don't envision an animal that's going to be, you know, 4 feet to his belly.
Right, right.
And you don't envision him being at 7 yards. So all of that prep was for naught because I never dreamed that I'd be shooting up 7 yards from the blind. So, you know, that stuff happens. But one of the things that I did learn over there is if you do not have a properly tuned arrow and a properly tuned bow and you do not have good arrow flight, you can't shoot through mesh blinds.
Yeah.
If you have good arrow flight and you have you've got incredible flight, you're perfectly tuned, you can shoot through mesh with no problem. If it's not, it will drastically change your point of impact. And I watched many a guy, you know, shoot over animals because they had a poorly tuned arrow, you know. So that's super important as well.
Wow.
Because a lot of guys around here shoot through the windows of these double bull blinds and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've done it before, you know. I mean,
yeah.
You know, and
who would think?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's just, it's nuts, man. And, you know, I mean, I've just gotten into, you know, paying attention to my gear a little bit more and talking about arrows. I mean, that's why we're on the phone. But, you know, and we talked about, we've kind of ragged on Southern hunters, you know, I mean, I've laid a lot of animals down with my bow, and have had subpar gear or subpar technique or whatever, but, it's just kind of like what you're getting. If I ever have that opportunity, we need to make sure that our stuff's 100% the best that it can be, to take on all those obstacles. So,
well, hey, you only know what you know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, if you've never been exposed to something, I mean, how can you be expected to know? Most guys just don't know. I mean, hey, I mean, you can't go to a remote village in the Amazon and, you know, go in there and expect these guys to know anything about religion or Christianity or what's going on in current events. They don't know. They only know what they know.
Yeah.
Southern guys only know what the guys at the shops have told them or what their buddies have told them over the years. And it's not anybody's fault.
No, it's not. It's you're exactly right.
And a lack of exposure.
Yep. You're exactly right.
Yeah. But it's an easy fix. I really had mixed emotions when hunting podcasts first started coming out. Really mixed emotions on whether it was something I was going to like or not. And man, I tell you, the benefit that these things have created, and the you know, the just the amount of information that hunters can absorb now, it's amazing. It is probably, people talk about all the time, what's the greatest advancement in bow hunting? What's the one thing that has changed bow hunting and made hunters more efficient? And everybody says the laser rangefinder.
Yeah.
And I say technology, media, the internet,
yeah,
podcasts, the access to information, that is what has been the huge success learning curve jump for archery and hunters, as far as I'm concerned, having, you know, incredible outlets of information at your fingertips. You just can't put a price on it.
Yeah, no, I agree completely, because without, you know, I've listened to podcasts for a long time before I started one, and that's just, I mean, it allowed me to listen to people who were a lot more knowledgeable than me talk about this stuff, and allowed me to learn. And that's what it's all about. I mean, we're learning to become better hunters. So
that's right. That's right. And you know, what's crazy is that, you know, I originally looked at them and thought, oh gosh, you know, these podcasts are just going to be, you know, another vehicle for the egomaniacs that want to become hunting celebrities. But as I've really embrace these things, golly, I mean, the majority of these things are guys that just want to get a good message out and help guys.
Yeah,
it's amazing. I truly love it, and I'm just super, super honored that you guys have asked me to come on here and at least, you know, tell what I know, whether it's right or wrong.
Well, I consider it right, and I'm going to take it until I miss an animal, then I'm going to blame you. So
okay. Well, get in line.
No, I'm giving you a hard time, dude. No. Hey, Brian, thanks for being on the show. I mean, I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. I really do.
Sure.
Guys, go check it out, day6gear.com. Shoot him a message on the website, and he'll get a hold of you. Use this to your advantage, and use his knowledge to your advantage. Let's all become better hunters together by continuing to share our knowledge of what works and what doesn't. So
that's right. And listen, I want to make this abundantly clear. You don't have to buy day6 gear to call me and ask for help. I don't care. Look, if you've got 2 dozen arrows that you've just bought and you want to figure out how to cut them and get them the right way, I don't care if you're buying from us or not. That's not what this is about. If anybody needs help, shoot me an email, call, text, whatever. I'm happy to help. That's why I got into this business. So I just want to make that clear.
Yeah, that's awesome of you, brother. That's awesome.
Yep.
Well, Brian, dude, thanks for being on the show. We're going to do another show with you soon. Okay. We got another, what is this, July? So we got another 3 months of no hunting in Texas. And so other than pigs and, you know, whatever. But yeah. We got plenty of time doing the show and talk about all your hunting adventures, which I definitely want to get into. But
sounds great, man.
Anyway, dude, thanks a lot, and sure, we'll talk to you soon.
You bet. All right.
Thank you for listening to the HuntCast. Stay up to date with all new episodes, special guests, and appearances by following us on your favorite social media platform. Search The HuntCast on Facebook or on Twitter and Instagram at The HuntCast.